Gladiator, ready! Oh, hang on, sorry, wrong Gladiator from 1992. Right, that was the UK Gladiator, sorry. Start again. Gonna buy a waterbed! Welcome to You Guys Podcast. I'm Rob, that's Liam, and this week we watched Gladiator. No, not that one. We watched the 1992 Gladiator about underground boxing high school students, starring James Marshall of Twin Peaks fame. Marshall stars as Tommy Riley, I'm assuming an 18-year-old who is tricked into competing in said underground boxing to help get Kevin McAllister's dad out of his gambling debt. Along the way, the squarest-headed man I've ever seen with the world's worst smile makes friends and enemies. Can Tommy fight to survive and save not only his dad's life, but Cuba Gooding Jr.'s as well? Yes, the story may be absurd. The acting can sometimes be cringy. I'm looking at you, Tommy, Romano, and Shortcut. But the fighting sequences are great. The soundtrack is ace. And Brian Dennehy as Horn seems to be having the time of his life. Now, Liam is probably going to try and convince you that this film isn't good, but I beg to differ. This is a fun ride and always an enjoyable watch for me. Much better, in my opinion, than that other Gladiator film.
Oh, I mean, I was so happy last week when you said Gladiator. I was like, oh, finally, he's going to see the error of his ways. He's looking for an excuse to revisit that 2000 cinematic classic. That's not me overstating it. That's exactly what it is. No, we're doing 1992's Rowdy Harrington's Gladiator, starring, yes, James Marshall, one of the worst leading men in cinematic history.
I mean, there's probably a reason why this is one and only starring role.
That's the thing. It's weird because I'm a big Twin Peaks fan. So I always knew him as James Hurley from that. And he's got zero charisma in that. But it's because it's Twin Peaks and it's got that whole kind of twisted soap opera vibe. I thought they were actually maybe subverting the idea of the handsome, you know, charismatic jock by giving, you know, James Marshall being so dead-eyed, having that weird smile and having no charisma. But no, that apparently that's just James Marshall, which sounds like a horrible thing to say, but he is a terrible leading man. I never know what his emotions are. He's dead-eyed. He has no relationship with any of the main characters. Part of that is the writing, but definitely part of it is the performance. He has zero fucking chemistry with Dawn. I mean, I don't think anyone has a chemistry with anyone in this movie. And you are right. I don't think this movie is great. But I will say this, it does get demonstrably better when Brian Dennehy is on screen. There is Brian no Dennehy doubt is, about that.
I mean, I don't know what the fuck Robert Loggia or Loggia or
Rob Loggia.
Loggia as Pappy Jack is doing. I mean, that guy is, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of questions. First, there are elements of this film where you mentioned the soundtrack, and we'll get to that in a moment, where you're like, this is aggressively, not 90s specifically, very early 90s. I've never seen such an aggressively 1992 movie. You don't look at this film and go, oh, that film looks like the 90s. No. This film looks and sounds like 1992. But then you get Pappy Jack, I'm still not sure why he's called Pappy Jack, where he seems to have come from a completely different age with his hat and the coat. He has that phone for some reason. it's almost as if they're trying to sell you on the idea early in the film that he's like into candy. Like out of the blue, he's like, give me a crunch bar. And then later on,
I wanted to bring that. That was one of my notes, right? Do you reckon that was an acting choice just to go, what was it, Leo, give me a crunch? Just to put on Nestle Crunch. Like, what?
Well, he says that, give me a crunch. And then one other time in the movie, they give him like what they call in America, a candy bar or a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that a thing? Or was Robert Loggia trying to kind of make this, like you say, a character trait? And then the director's just like, I'm not having this. It felt like, remember Richard Attenborough in the first Jurassic Park film, where like at the start of the film, he's Scottish for like 5 minutes and then quietly just goes, fuck this, I'm not going to be Scottish anymore. It kind of feels like that, only it's chocolate bars instead. He's a strange character. And above all else, feels kind of pointless. I mean, I love the name and everything, but you could arguably just get rid of him and just have Brian Dennehy in this film. I think he can do the role of both characters, and it would streamline what is, at least in terms of relationships and narrative, surprisingly messy.
There is a lot going on, like, and a lot of things that don't seem to get settled. You have James Marshall as Tommy Riley, who instantly has an argument with Bits and Shortcut Stormtroopers.
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut until you, because I've got so much to say about this motherfucker.
After he destroys Shortcut in the ring, You don't like. I really wanted Spitz to get his comeuppance. Nothing happens to the dude. It just like he just disappears.
Well, this has got a similar problem actually to what happened last week when we did the Air Force One podcast, where basically you have the big build up to the big fight, and then there's still 25 minutes of the film left. And there was a similar issue with this, where he fights Shortcut at the end, and then all of a sudden there's still 20, 25 minutes, and it becomes a different movie. Don't get me wrong, Brian Dennehy's fun and stuff, but there are elements of this film where like, things are just happening, and the ending of this film just kind of happens. But to bring it, like you mentioned it at the top of the podcast with James Marshall, like, oh, I guess he's supposed to be 18. I mean, motherfucker, Shortcut looks 45 years old in this film. Yeah. And Spitz is wearing a motherfucking bowler hat. Like, I'm sorry, but I know fashion in 1992 was pretty wild. I can't remember anyone wearing a bowler hat and going, oh, this is gangster, this is G, you know?
I do love as well, because it's set in, it is Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's Chicago. Yeah, it feels Chicago-ish. I absolutely love that they're all meant to be hard, but they film it in the height of winter. So they all got their coats right up to their chins and all these scarves and everything. And like, none of them are looking hard. They're all just looking like they're trying to survive like the eternal winter.
Well, it's a tough time in terms of fashion, because 1992 was the era of the big coats as well. So you've got the bad weather in Chicago. And also, I'm a little upset that this is a Chicago film, because literally this week I booked a trip to go to Chicago and I'm watching this film going, God damn, man. I hope I'm going to like Sherman, Illinois, or fucking, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'm not going to this version of fucking Chicago. But like, when Romano, for instance, shows up early in the film, like, he couldn't look any more New Kids on the Block. Like, that's the fashion of this film. It's New Kids on the Block, where he's got that weird ass like chain earring. He's got that rat's tail at the back. And you're like, all right, this is a look. Oh, until he makes a little bit of money and he's like, oh, I'm going to dress like a 1970s pimp for the rest of this movie.
The whole waterbed thing and everything. Oh. But you want to talk about rat's tails, because I was all ready to talk
about... By the way, just be clear, I always want to talk about rat's tails.
I was all ready to talk about his rat's tail. And then, and I will say, I love this film. So there's no denying, whatever I say about this film, I still love this film at the end of it. Mm-hmm. But when you get Black Death show up into the ring, and whatever he had on the back of his neck, like, he had the smallest bit of pony rat tail thing going on.
It was like a little padwan thing going on at the back. It was, there was, like I said, most of this film has an aggressively, like, I would describe it as New Kids on the Block look. Like, there was, it's not a 90s look, it's an early 90s specific look, and this film goes all in on it. I mean, James Marshall, as Tommy, he, you know, falls into the same category for most of the film, but I think it was around, like, the 45-minute mark, he suddenly decides to start dressing like a normal human being, which kind of lasts for the rest of the film. Like, everyone's dressed like a lunatic, and I didn't even think about the fact that, like you said, because it's cold, everybody has these big ass bomber jackets. I mean, that was the style. Like, over in the UK, there was like an era around the same time, 92, 93, when everyone used to wear like black bomber jackets, but with like appliance names on the back. I remember I had one and it had like fucking like Kenwood on the back.
Yes.
What were we all thinking in 1992? We all just universally lost our fucking mind in terms of fashion for a bit of time there. But if anything puts this in 1992, my fucking days, is it the soundtrack for this film?
Oh, yeah. I want again. So I just, before we get into the soundtrack, I did want to ask one question. Did you think, and like I said, I do love this film, but did you think...
I love the fact you have to keep saying, no, I'm going to shit on this film, I do love this film.
The introduction of the Avenging Angels and the Stormtroopers, that weird, how are your Avenging Angels? Close to God, brother. Close to the wrath of God. Mm-hmm. And then nothing comes of it. With that, like, I was expecting, when I first watched this film, I'm expecting some all-out gang war or something at the end. Nothing happens. Shortcut just takes his shortcuts with Romano and puts him in the hospital. And then he gets fucked up by Tommy Riley, and that's it. Done.
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, as I said earlier, a lot of things just happen in this film. I mean, for instance, you know, we've got a character called Abraham Lincoln. That's not explained, as far as I can tell. He's just called Abraham Lincoln. We're just dealing with that. All right, fair enough. But yeah, like, at the start, I thought it was going to be more of a like an inner city movie.
Yeah.
And that's not just like the second, like the location, the way it's shot. Like there was a period in the early 90s. See, I'm saying like, you know, we went crazy with the fashion, but there were a lot of white savior movies in the early to mid 90s. And they all looked just like this, where like a white teacher or a white student goes to a school. I know he fucking learns to dance, or he teaches the black kids how to read, or some nonsense like that. And it was almost, it felt like they were all shot in the same place in the same school, and they just moved people in and out in terms of sets and different characters and shot a bunch of different films. I thought this was going to go that way. One of the cool things about it is it doesn't have that white savior vibe about it. It is very much, oh yeah, he's, you know, in the south side of the city, you know, he's not accustomed to being there, but they don't play on that too much. And even though the neighborhoods they mention that he's from, he's not like from Bel Air. Like I looked up the neighborhood that I forgot what the
Bridgeport
name of it is. Bridgeport. Like it's a working class area in Chicago. It's not like a rich area. It's just not as bad as where he ends up in the school.
Yeah, and that's right. Like the whole film, the whole thing with Tommy Riley is he's just trying to make it through. Mm-hmm. He's literally just trying to save his dad. His dad's gone through some stuff since their mum died. They've fallen on hard times. He doesn't want his dad falling back into all of this. So the only way he sees he can get through it is to fight. And that's it. In his mind, I only need to fight five more times. Once the death's done, I'm out. So
yeah, he's quite stoic in this. And I think if you get a better actor, you know, I think they're like, basically what they're thinking is like, oh, a modern day James Dean, like this stoic, cool character. And he's stoic, all right. But he just doesn't have the charisma behind it to pull it off.
I mean, if I had to get... falling into the one more change section, mm-hmm. don't have him smile.
What, at all? Yeah.
At all. Like every time when Romano pops up to him and says, can I borrow a cigarette? Okay, that's fine. Can I have one for after school? Yeah. Do you want one for your sister? Do you want one for your girlfriend, mum and dad? And then he does this weird, I'm joking smile, and it's awful. It is.
And it makes every sequence, because the only person they try to force a bit of charisma with, because he never smiles with Dawn. It's just supposed to be kind of like, I don't know, sexual tension or something. That doesn't work. And we'll get to what is the worst sex scene in cinematic history, by the way, in just a moment.
We need to talk about Chatterblind before that, though. One of the worst chat lines ever.
Of course.
Do you want some soda?
Do you want some? Yeah, well, they try and add drama to he and Dawn's like relationship. So I'm going to try and find it here. But there is a line where, like, you know, they're trying to add kind of nuance and, as I said, drama to his relationship with Dawn. And she comes in, she goes, oh, my mum's not going to hire you to wash dishes anymore. I'm like, really? That's as much drama as we're fucking getting in this film? It's insane. But they try and add at least a bit of levity between him and Romano. And instead, it just comes off of like as an awkwardly gay romance, because you keep thinking, it's like, does he want to fuck Romano? I don't quite know what they're going for here. So, yeah, him smiling is just weird and awkward, which is not great when you're talking about your leading man in a film. But then I could talk, as I said earlier, about all the relationships. I don't think the relationship between him and Abraham really works. Like, they try and force it at the end. Like, the last scene, the last shot in this movie is him shaking Abraham's hands. Like, they've gone through this big race war. I'm like, dude, they've been friends the entire movie.
Yeah, that's it. Why? He's held his baby. What did he call his baby? Black Beauty. He's held his baby. They've been friends. They've had conversations. And all of a sudden, you get the handshake at the end as if to say, we're settling the race war. And it's like, well, no, that didn't happen. I mean, he's been friends with, and I do want to get into Ozzie Davis as Noah. When what's your name? Noah. No, I don't have a boat. I don't have an ark. I just have, what was it? Recollections. What the fuck? Where did that come from?
I love Ozzie Davis, but he doesn't get a lot to work with in this film. And no. I mean, you mentioned the whole baby thing. Like, Abraham's wife just steps out of, I don't know, the 1920s. Like, even when they have a moment when they're running away from Shortcut and his gang, and they try to build up that relationship when they're in the house together. And he pulls out a picture of his baby and his wife, and it's like the picture of Sarah Connor in Terminator. Like, that picture is, he's like, oh, this is my wife. She's like 16 years old. Like, dude, that picture is 47 years old. She comes from the 1920s. She's traveled from the past. It's weird as fuck.
Also, doesn't that feel a bit ick to you as well? Cuba Gooding Jr. is, what, 25, 26 at this point, playing a 17, 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I know he's playing a 17, and that's fine. But he says, this is my missus. She just turned 16. This is my what, 3-year-old, 2-year-old, 1-year-old baby? So she was 15, 14.
Like, he was around the same age. Like you said, in terms of if he looked 16, you'd be like, it's fine. It's fine. But the problem is everybody in this film looks middle-aged. And I know there is a history, and up until pretty recent, if you go back to the old, before Tom Holland became Spider-Man, even Andrew Garfield was 29 when he played Peter Parker, and he's supposed to be in high school. The problem is these guys were all somewhere between 25 and 30, but they all look about 37. James Marshall, I keep conflating his name and his character's name. James Marshall is 25 when he films this, but he looks 32. Shortcut was in his mid-20s. He looks 47. And I don't think
Shortcut was in his mid-20s.
I assume he was. I haven't actually checked. Oh. You're going to have to look that up, but I'm talking now. But, I mean, he looks so old. But then Cuba Gooding Jr. has never looked particularly young. He didn't look convincing as a kid in, Boys in the Hood. But I don't know. Maybe it's because they spend more time in high school in this movie or something. I don't know. But it's a lot of, let's be clear, grown-ass men pretending to be kids. And it just doesn't really work. And I think because there aren't many actual adults in the movie, there's one teacher you see. You see James Heard, his father. It is James Heard, the actor, isn't it, who plays his father? I'm not making that up.
John Heard. Sorry, I apologize.
So I was making that up. You have one scene with John Heard, but then for the most of the movie then, other than, obviously Brian Dennehy and Rob Loggia, it's basically a bunch of quote-unquote kids. But other than Romano, who is the one person who arguably looks like he might be at least in his early 20s, everyone else looks like a fucking middle-aged man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I can't find Shortcut's age, probably because going into his known for an IMDb, he hasn't done much. He has done things. So I'm not even going to ask you to guess Shortcut's known for, because you're never going to get anything.
No, I'm definitely not going to get that. Jesus Christ.
So obviously known for being Shortcut in Gladiator. Mm-hmm. Known for being Lamar in a film called Wu.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did I see that he was in a Mike Tyson biopic or something?
Yeah, he was in the Tyson biopic in 1995.
See, I know that because I was doing the exact same thing. I remember now, I had to look up his age and I also couldn't find it.
So I only know him from one other film that's in his known for, Project Metal Beast.
You know what Project Metal Beast is?
Yeah, I loved Project Metal Beast.
You don't just know Project Metal Beast. I love Project Metal Beast.
Yeah. It was Barry Boswick, right? They inject werewolf blood into a guy, and then obviously if I remember rightly, they turn him into some sort of werewolf cyborg. I mean, I watched it years and years ago, and they kill him. And I'm trying to think of this now. I do need to find this film again. They kill him with a silver rocket launcher.
That does sound fucking dope, admittedly.
Yeah,
we need a silver bullet. That's not going to be enough. We need a silver rocket. Where the fuck do you get a silver rocket launcher? You can get someone to put together, arguably, you don't need a silver gun, do you? You need just a gun, but it needs a silver bullet. But even if you just need a silver rocket.
Sorry, I meant a rocket, not a silver rocket. A silver
I love rocket. The idea. No, the whole thing. The rocket launcher.
The whole thing has to be silver. Yeah.
So the rocket needs to be silver as well. No, the rocket could just be a rocket. A rocket launcher needs to be silver. That's the weird thing about this. But anyway.
Right, now I need to find Project Metal Beast again. We said it before on this podcast. I would rent any DVD, not DVD, video I could from the video shop around the corner from where my mum worked. So I watched all these films growing up, all these random ones and things like that.
I was so much more selective when I was younger. I could smell one of these fucking movies a mile off. I watched so few of those where I'm just like, that looks god. And that was me when I was 10. I was like, no, I'm not fucking watching. I think I went as far as Schwarzenegger films. I got as far as Raw Deal. I'm just like, oh yeah, not every film is awesome. Some films are just rubbish.
Oh, dude.
This film, right. I know that there is stuff to like in this film. I'm not going to completely shit on it, but it's a mess. And it's there are moments when it is borderline well acted, not well acted, well cast, made for TV movie melodrama. And I don't think the score helps. The scene with John Hurt really tiptoes around that at times.
Yeah.
And, I don't think any film has ever had its lunch eaten so spectacularly online before, which isn't speaking to the quality of this, but when you're a whatever boxing movie And then, you know, Ridley Scott makes one of the quintessential movie of the 2000s in Gladiator. It's like, if you type in Gladiator, you really have to put in 1992, because you are going to have to go out a lot. Like, you use the example of the TV show. I didn't even think about that. If you type Gladiator, you're up against the TV show, which is obviously back on British screens at least. You've got one of the best movies of the 21st century. And then you've got 1992's Gladiator. It's like, if you made a completely whatever movie in 1985 and called it Google, it's like that's the level we're talking about here. This film has disappeared.
I love, whenever I talk about Gladiator, I'm talking about this film.
Everyone just looks at you like, what the fuck is he talking about? I can't remember Cuba Gooding Jr. being in Gladiator. This doesn't make any sense. And that's the thing, right? Let's be honest. Like you said, you grew up with this film, there's stuff to like. But if you put, and we'll call this a boxing movie, despite the fact that it's an underground boxing movie, other than a few kicks and, you know, kicks to the groin, this is ostensibly a boxing movie. I think if you looked at any list of, top 25, maybe even top 50 boxing movies, I don't think this is making it onto those lists. I really don't. There are a lot of good boxing movies, and it is bewildering that you chose
this one. I am so Googling this right now.
Honestly, I'd be amazed. Like, if you put in top 25 boxing films, I don't think this is getting on any of them. I don't mean that in a mean way. I think and that is on most lists where they won't even count multiple Rockies. They'll count Rocky as one movie, and I still don't think this gets anywhere near the top 25. I just don't think it's a very good movie. It's just too bang average. Like I said, it's kind of saved by Brian Dennehy, who's great in this film, but. I hate to tell you, and I know some people will be listening to this and they'll be big fans of this from when they were younger and you'll have nostalgia attached, but it's not a very well-made movie. I know you talked about the boxing scenes. The boxing scenes aren't actually very well shot, dude. I'm sorry to say.
I think they're great.
The end should have been great against, the big fight with Brian Dennehy, the way he slaps him out of the ring is so cartoonish. And when he finally knocks out Brian Dennehy at the end, and they cut to Tommy, he has the most gormless look on his face. I'm like, how many takes did you use to get that? That was the fucking end of the film, and then they have the handshake, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this film? So, yeah, it's a strange one.
You're going to call this bullshit, right? This has to be somebody like me who's just put this on. This can't be in order, by the way. Mm-hmm. Because I put top 25 boxing movies. And Google has just given me a load of boxing films. I don't think this is an actual order, right? But I'm going to read the films up that they've given us.
Okay.
That in top left. So this can't be an order.
No.
Southpaw?
No, it won't be an order. But Southpaw's a lot better than this year.
Yeah. Bleed for This.
Mm-hmm.
Python.
Mm-hmm.
Cinderella Man.
Mm-hmm.
Love that film. Ali.
Mm-hmm.
The Fighter.
Yep.
Hands of Stone.
Mm-hmm.
The Boxer.
Yep.
Rocky.
Yep.
Grudge Match.
Mm-hmm.
Undisputed 2, Last Man Standing.
Ooh, that is left field. I wasn't expecting that one. Wasn't expecting that one. I think Rob put that vote in.
Rocky 3.
Mm-hmm.
The Champ. Raging Bull. Warrior. Freed. Far and Away. Match.
Yeah, big, obviously.
Big George Foreman. Real Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Knuckle. Chuck. Or The Bleeder, depending on where you watch it. Mm-hmm. Rocky Balboa.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Bloody hell. Getting into the weeds now.
Gladiator.
Okay, there we go.
3-2, Rocky 4, Rocky 2.
Well, I will give you this. What you're basically doing there is reading off a list of boxing movies. And yes, this is indeed factually a boxing movie.
Yeah.
I just don't think, you make that list, and I will say, nearly all of those are better than this film. They're just they're not necessarily more fun though. So I will give you that. I didn't hate watching this film. It's very easy to pick apart because, as I said, you know, the relationship with Dawn doesn't work. There's no point in having both Pappy, Big Pappy, whatever, not Big Pappy, is it Jesus Christ?
Pappy Jack.
And Brian Dennehy's character, that's superfluous. The relationship with Romano doesn't work because you end up with Tommy's weird weird smile, or James Marshall's strange smile. The whole thing, you know, you're like, well, Cuba Gooding Jr. is in this. All the stuff with him feels overwrought and unearned. So I would go as far as to say that just about nothing in this film works. But because of the setting and everything, and it is quite cheesy, and it doesn't know it's as cheesy as it is, it means that it is a fun watch. but that doesn't mean it's a good movie. And I was
I still think it's great. And you're going to hate my star.
And to your defense, you're not the only one. Like, if you look, there is a distinct difference between the critical reviews of this film and the IMDb score. Like, you know, we mentioned last week when you picked this film, I was like, fucking Gladiator. But I was like, the IMDb score is like 6.5. People like this film. So I might be an outlier. I don't have that nostalgia. I'm not like, I grew up with this, watching it in 92, and I might have felt very differently if I'd watched this when I was 10 years old and I was rewatching it now. But coming to it as a, you know, 41-year-old man, seeing it for the first time in 2024, it's very hard not to just pick holes in the whole fucking movie.
I could totally agree with that. I've picked holes in this film as we've gone on. So I totally agree with you on that one. Just changing, I know I've changed the subject a lot already.
That's okay.
But thinking, as much as we differ with films like this or like the way we look at films, I got to think we're similar in a couple of things. Well, I know we're similar in a couple of things. One of the things I know we're going to be similar in, we both watched this film, saw Noah, and instantly thought of his turn in Bubba Hotep, yeah?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, when I think of Ozzie Davis, I immediately think of him playing a black JFK in a, you know, an old person's home in Bubba Hotep. 100%. There were two things I thought with this film straight away. I was like, oh, cool, there's Ozzie Davis. And as soon as I saw Romano, I was like, he's going to die later. In fairness, he does. I don't think he actually dies. He ends up in a coma. But you could see that coming a mile off.
He's not pulling a miraculous recovery, is he? They've got him on the... They said his brain's dead. He's done. So they're just going to need the bed at some point and pull the plug.
With Ozzie it's actually much more depressing when you say it like that. It's like, oh, God, this film is pretty dark.
With Ozzie Davis as Noah, what did Horn have on him?
I don't know. I don't know.
Because they were having this conversation like they're having a heart attack, and they told, oh, tell me about Horn, or Horn could have gone all the way, but he was born with a bad foot when he did all this. And then there were things like, I'm still looking for his weakness, son. Trust me, I'm still looking for it. Oh, what does he have on you, dude?
I don't know. I guess maybe it's just like the fear that if I walk away, he'll come after me. It's like, oh, if he wants you to work for him, kind of like with Tommy, it's like, oh, he'll make it happen. But again, Ozzie Davis, he's such a fun actor. And he's another one of those people. It's like when I saw him in this film, I was like, oh, this would be cool. But maybe it's because he spent, again, most of his screen time with Tommy. It just didn't land for me. Ozzie Davis he has like a lot of really random ass lines, as you mentioned.
A lot of his lines seem to be like pearls of wisdom that he's trying to do. Like, anger is the enemy. Make him think you're weak when you're strong. Like, what this the fuck?
Did you ever play Punch Out on the NES, on the original NES? Yeah. And you were in the corner as like little Mac. And between rounds, basically, it would just cut like you, like that's the writing kind of coming through. And it basically would just get like a few pearls of wisdom from the coach between rounds. That's what it felt like with Ozzie Davis. It just felt like he wasn't a character. He was just reading like off an inspirational poster for the entire film. It was all very odd. But as I mentioned earlier, we've got to talk about it. That, I'm going to say sex scene. Like, I didn't even, right, because you've mentioned now about the cold, like everyone's trying to act tough, but they're all wearing these big, huge jackets. It's like they're trying to have a sex scene, but apparently they're just too cold. So all you get them doing, he and Dawn, of the zero, as I said, zero chemistry. Like the worst on-screen couple I think I've ever seen. They're just rubbing their feet together at the bottom of the bed, and then they cut up. And they've got like one crusty ass blanket over them.
Yeah.
But they've kind of pulled it in a way so that they've made like little snuggies for themselves. So they're kissing, but they're almost in separate beds. And you're like, really? Like, it was, if anything, it was the perfect visual representation of their relationship. Bullshit. Bullshit.
I had to imagine as well all the foreplay just being lost because they got all this foreplay ready to, I know you have to fight Shoka, blah, blah, blah. And she says, and then they get to the sex scene. But all I can think about is the fact that he probably had to untape his mattress as that makeshift boxing bag first before they laid it down. And then
it's going to be all sweaty and gross. Like, Jesus Christ, you can do better. And admit, I think there's only one thing weirder than the sex scene is the absolutely out of the fucking blue happy montage in the middle of this film.
I love that song. Cheap Trick, I Will Survive. I think it's fucking great, dude.
I enjoyed the song. I enjoyed the montage. There is one problem. It's from a different fucking movie. That's the big issue.
And what starts that montage is her kissing him and then swearing at him. And she has the longest middle finger I think I've ever seen.
I didn't notice it. I got to check that out.
When she just gives him that, and it's just fucking up there. It's just, what the fuck is with that finger?
She gives him that. By the way, he just did the finger to me. It's like,
yeah.
People, oh, yeah, I guess maybe we're putting this on YouTube now. I don't know.
You want to say something that takes you out of the film? It's the ref at the end during the horn fight.
Oh, yeah, he's terrible.
One, two, come on, kid, you can make it. Three, four, come on, you get it. You mean rooting for this dude?
It's very at one point, like, what's the point in the referee? Like, the rules of this place are very strange because it's underground boxing, but it is supposed to be boxing, and there's just like people getting kicked in the crotch, like anything goes. Like, they don't even get a warning. Like, at some point, you're just like, well, it might as well just be MMA. Like, it's very odd. You'd think at least they would just get like a little nod from the ref, go, come on, you can't do that. But they kind of let it go because it's underground boxing. But it just seems to be kicks in the crotch, elbows to the face, do whatever the fuck you want. It's very strange. But then the whole world that they've created of the boxing is in itself absolutely bananas, because if you look at the crowd, it's full of 80-year-old women by the looks of things. It's very strange. They don't start the betting until apparently the fucking bell rings. They're leaving so much money on the table. They literally don't let anyone bet until 2 seconds before the fight starts.
I've never understood movie betting.
It's right. Insane. Like, I just thought, when you see it in films and you see it in Rambo 3 or you see it in Kickbox, you're like, well, that's just what they do in Thailand, bro. But it appears to be in all movies.
That's it. Well, I mean, they just jam money into a guy's hand and then they just give him a slip. No, I don't even know what's on that slip because they haven't written anything on it. The one that used to get me all the time was The Running Man.
Oh, when, yeah.
You had those guys outside going, I'll put money on Richards. Okay, we'll do it and I'll give you a slip. Like, how do you know? Who are you collecting from at the end of it? Who are you taking a slip? The betting is, movie betting is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
It is absolutely insane. But it's like, at least with this film, they know they can't run away if they lose the bet because they're all 72 years old at least. So that is something, I suppose. But then even like when Tommy wins his first fight and Rob Loggia gets in the ring, holds up his hand and just keeps shouting, he's mine. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I think what they're hinting at early in the film, and there are a few lines of dialogue where maybe there's going to be this power struggle between Rob Loggia's character and Brian Dennehy's character. And again, it just never materializes. So the two characters being there feels pointless.
He's going like, Horn wants to see you. And as they're walking up the stairs, he's going, remember who brought you. Remember who brought you to the party. Mm-hmm. Remember. And it's like, okay, but like, you are basically his lapdog. So I don't understand what's going on with you. And you're right. He is obsessed with sweets. The whole, when he chucks peanut M&Ms at Tommy Riley's head, he goes, oh, you like peanut butter M&Ms, do you? Or peanut M&Ms. Why are you saying the full name of it? Is it like some sort of weird product?
Like he's got a deal going on. Yeah. But yeah, as I said, like that goes away. Like, I like Rob Loggia, and he's fun in this film because he is, as I said, swinging for the fences with the mobile phone, the hat. There's like a whole bunch of affectations. He's like every single one. It's like, oh, I've got to have the hat. I've got to have the mobile phone. I've got to have the whole candy thing. It's like, okay, it's almost like he's read the script and gone, my character's kind of pointless, but people are going to fucking remember me. That's for sure. Yeah. What's my character's name? Dave? No. I'm going to be called Pappy Jack. Of course you are. There is too much going on with Pappy Jack for a character who ostensibly could not be in this film, and it wouldn't be different at all.
And why are you calling him Pappy? Oh, just so we can use the line, I'll be the best damn Pappy you've ever had.
Oh, that's a gross line as well. This film's so strange, but we mentioned it earlier in the film, earlier in the podcast, I do apologize, very early in the film. The way it opens, I was very optimistic when this film started with Killer by Adamski and Seal. I was like, oh, here we go. This is 1992 like a motherfucker. And that is because I always, and I've mentioned this podcast before, I was like, man, I think Losing My Religion by REM is maybe the most 90s thing ever, let alone the most 90s music video and stuff. Yeah. But if you go back and watch the video by Adamski and Seal for Killer, again, I think it's like this film. I don't think it's necessarily a 90s video. It's aggressively 1992. But it actually led me on this whole like fucking rabbit hole where I was like looking for the most 90s music video ever. And the one that popped into my head was, remember Stay by Shakespeare's Sister? I ended up listening to that like fucking four times. If you're listening to this and you've not heard Stay by Shakespeare Sister, don't just listen to that song. Please watch the video. It is fucking bananas in the best possible way.
Yeah.
And if you're one of our American listeners, I'm not sure if it would have made it over there. But over here, you have to keep in mind that song was number one for like 6 weeks. It was absolutely massive and it's bonkers. But yeah, Killer by Seal is dope.
You mentioned the intro. Mm-hmm. How many times do you reckon he had to make that basketball shot?
Oh, no, there's no way he's good at basketball.
No. So he does the basketball shot and then just spits again for no reason whatsoever. Did I ask you to shoot the ball? You're whiting up my basketball hoop or my back. Like, what? You're whiting up? What's going on?
It's just one of those immediately trying to build up like race things. Like, he just, anyone would be like, oh, good shot. It's like, oh, look at this fucking cracker thinking he can play basketball. It's like, oh, settle down, guys. Like, they're so aggressive so quickly for just zero reason. And as you say, like, it feels like it's building towards something. Like, you think, oh, what's going to happen? He's going to team up with Abraham and his gang. And, oh, yeah, maybe you'll get caught in the middle. It'll become... And it's just this whole narrative thread which doesn't go anywhere. And it comes back to one of my major issues. You know I've shit in this film, but like I said, it's fun in parts, but its major, major issue is there are too many narrative threads and none of them get the time that they deserved. So nothing matters in this film. Like, the fight with... A shortcut doesn't have as much impact as it should. They try and force it on you by, you know, completely, like, you know, Romano's going to get fucked up in that fight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, something horrible is going to happen. I mean, I would say to Romano, I don't want to be a dick, but how about just fall on the fucking floor? Like, he just stands in the corner taking hits for like 20 minutes. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
but I mean, the rules of the boxing means that they won't count him down, I don't think. Shortcut will probably just keep standing on his head.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Are we of the mindset that Shortcut was actually just a terrible boxer? Like you know, because Abraham is like goading him earlier. Like, listen, if you haven't got your boys with you and you just got in the ring, I'm going to fuck you up. Romano, until he puts the stuff in his eyes, like, he absolutely batters him. Yeah. And then Tommy, again, just kicks his ass. I'm like, well, I mean, dude, like, Shortcut's supposed to be this big badass. Like, fucking Shortcut's a bitch.
It's so literal, hit the nail on the head, that his name is Shortcut. He's taking shortcuts. But
I love it if he was just called I Blind Other Guys.
Yeah. Thank you for saying Shortcut's a bitch. No more said or no more shown than right at the beginning where he says, hello time, hello place, whips out a knife, and then he's armed, by the way. So he's fighting a guy his own age, apparently, because he's being expelled from school. When the teachers come, who are the whitest teachers I've ever seen,
whitest motherfucker, yeah.
He throws that knife in the air. Legend has it, that knife is still stuck in somebody's head somewhere.
Yeah.
He doesn't even drop it on the ground. He just, whoa, there it goes. Just throw. And then they pick him up and just take him out of school like he's a baby.
Yeah, he's like, don't drop me. Don't fucking drop me.
When he comes back then and he tries to, and then Romano says something about go fuck a goat. And he goes up, he goes, what'd you say? And then the copper steps in front. Whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, just,
well, again,
Shortcut's
right,
a bitch, dude.
If, say he was a kid who was like, say Shortcut was actually being played by, say, a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
All that stuff would maybe make sense. Like, you're acting tough in front of your friends, but then there's still that thing, like, you can be tough, but there's a difference between being tough as a 17-year-old and a grown-ass man putting their hands on you. Like, it's just a different beast. And I get the idea of some big cop or security guard suddenly picking you up and you're like, oh, I'm tough, but I'm still a kid, like, I'm 17, and they come and pick you up. I can understand how on the page that might work, but of course, Shortcut's 47 years old, so it's just a grown man being picked up by other grown men, and like you said, just looks like a bitch. If that's a 17-year-old kid who actually looks 17, that scene probably works.
Yeah,
but it absolutely doesn't work at all.
They were saying as well, I thought you were expelled, blah blah blah, and he's saying, I gotta keep an eye on my stormtroopers and things like that. Stormtroopers as well. But it made me think back to school days. I don't know if you had this, but any kid that ever got suspended or expelled in school for the next couple of weeks would just come to the school gates when school's finished, just riding their bike and asking what was going on in school and things like that.
I don't be a dick. Most kids who got expelled probably didn't have like the happiest home lives. And that never happened. I went to Cardiff High, so like nobody got expelled.
Oh, la-dee-da. Yeah. Fucking
what can I say? Well, it just didn't happen, you know.
Dude, I went to Rumney. I went to Rumney High.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that happened there for sure. If people are like, I don't know these high schools. Needless to say, it didn't happen in Cardiff High. It definitely happened in Rumney. That's for damn sure. Very different.
Yeah, we always had the guys.
Sorry,
I said we always had the guys that would just wait at school gates just to talk to people and like see what's going on and acting hard because they've been expelled. It's like, what?
Don't tell anyone, bro. What happened in maths? You doing algebra again, bro? Like, I've got to know. I've got to fucking know. So strange. So strange. But yeah, the whole universe of this film is absolutely bizarre. But anything else you want to add before we move on to favorite scenes?
No, I mentioned I don't know why I waited until the end, but I mentioned the knife getting thrown in the air. I still think that was funny as fuck. That was one of the biggest knives as well for a flick knife.
And yeah, was he actually trying to kill him? I'm like, God damn, dude, like you're not gonna get thrown out of school. You're gonna go down to 20 to life, you know? It's like fucking hardcore.
And he just launched it, and he didn't even fold it up before he threw it in the air. It was still erect.
Yeah, most people, like you said, would like drop it down the back, or you know what a better film would do is they would have it where he would like sneakily hand it to one of his friends in the crowd
and spit it in his bowler hat.
Yeah, he put it in. Like, why else does he have a bowler hat if not to hide fucking knives? Jesus Christ, there has to be a reason.
And Spitz is not. I do have one more thing to add. As a go, Spitz is not a gang member. Spitz is the guy that gets bullied and goes to drama club.
Absolutely.
He does not in any way, shape, or like when he's got his bomber jacket all the way up and he's got his bowler hat, but then he comes into class and he's wearing some sort of knitted sweater.
Yeah, it's weird. And his friends don't look tough. They just stand in the background. Yeah, you fucking telling Spitz. You know, it's just like, come on, guys. This is so fucking dumb.
It's amazing.
Depending on how you feel about this film, it falls somewhere between amazing and dumb. And that is most of the film, like, depending on what mindset you're watching this in. And that is the thing you have to remember, because I don't have this connection with it. I'm watching it critically. That is my biggest problem with this film, is I was watching it critically. If I was just letting this film wash over me, I might actually feel a lot more positive on it, because there is fun stuff in it, and it is almost so dopey that you can take enjoyment from it. But yeah, if you watch this film with a critical eye, it's not long before you're like, well, there appears to be a handful of problems with this movie. But it is what it is. But I am going to go with favorite scene, I don't think I've talked about him much enough, sorry, is just how great Brian Dennehy is in this film. He hasn't been in enough films. It's like they're reminded of just how awesome he is in Rambo First Blood. And what he's got is he's got, like what I mentioned earlier, grown man strength. Like when he gets into the ring and he has to wear a vest because he's carrying all that timber. Like, dude, like Brian Dennehy was like 55 years old. Like Tommy's a boxer. But he was still supposed to be a kid. And I'm like, I totally buy the idea that Brian Dennehy can absolutely handle himself, whether he's in shape or not. He's got like this air of menace, which is just uniquely Brian Dennehy. And like I said, the film is without question demonstrably better when he's on the screen. Like in every sequence. Yeah, he's really good in this film. And he is chewing the scenery in the best possible way.
Do you want to move on to favorite scene?
Yes, yeah. So my favorite scene, unsurprisingly, is Brian Dennehy when he teaches that guy, like, you know, when he starts talking shit when they're in the ring, he's tending to be smart and stuff, and then he steps on his foot and just kicks his ass. And that guy's massive. But I'm like, I totally buy the idea that Brian Dennehy's just too smart for him and just kicks his ass. And it's just like, immediately, he's like, everyone's scared of him, and he's a big fucking dude. He's a big unit of a guy. He's got that guy. Like, when you just see him, you're just like, yeah, I can see why nobody wants to fuck with him. And then they double down with, like, that bit in the ring where he's trying to teach the guy the rules of the game. He's not listening, so he gets his ass whooped. I'm like, yep, I'm totally on board for Brian Dennehy in this film. So that's my favorite scene.
I wanted to say mine was going to be the final fight, because it's all the culmination of Tommy Riley learning from the scene that you've just said. He's learning the stuff. He's been watching it. He's smarter than people think he is, and he's the one that finds Hone's weakness. But I wanted to say that would be my fight. And I know you pulled a face. It's a great fight scene. I love. That's my favorite fight scene. But my favorite scene is the montage.
I love the montage, just to be clear. It's just everything up until the montage is miserable. And I'm like, well, all right, I guess we're just going to use our montage to say everything's better now. As soon as the montage finishes, things get miserable again. I'm like, well, so there's just like, there's 2 minutes of happiness in this film and it's just overlaid with a song and a montage. I'm like, come the fuck on. Like in any of the film, I'm like, that montage is dope. It just doesn't work in this film.
I love it. I love the montage. The song is fucking great by Cheap Trick. Yeah. I Will Survive. It's fantastic. Totally. I think probably because of the song, but like I said, it's just joyful. It lifts you up. I think it's great.
I agree. Right. If you took that, if I just watched that clip, like that montage in a vacuum is my favorite sequence in this film. It's just, I don't know, I had to stop and think. And I was like, as soon as I started thinking, I'm like, wait a minute, that didn't make any sense. Like,
your problem.
Basically, there's no, like I said, there is no charisma, there's no chemistry between Dawn and Tommy. And they know it so much that they basically sneak their entire relationship into a 2-minute montage, which also includes, I know, a minute and a half of boxing. So it's just like, oh, they kiss and everything's cool. And we're just going to get on with the film.
And that's your problem, though, isn't it? You stop to think. Don't stop and think.
Don't stop. Just don't watch stop and enjoy.
Just move forward. Just
that's the way. That's the way with this film. In terms of loves and hates, I can't wait for this. Number one, Brian Dennehy. Easily. Number two, there is a moment in this film where I thought the threat of violence feels relatively legit. Like, I did buy the idea that this was a tough school for a bit.
Yeah.
Until, you know, I was like, why is he wearing a bowler hat? Like, I had to just kind of let go of the fact that, all right, it's 92 fashion and stuff. But for the most part, I was like, I bought the kind of location, the idea that this was a rough neighborhood and stuff. And number three, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that it didn't turn into a white savior movie. I know he wins the day, but he's not winning it for anyone else. Like, you know, he didn't, like, win the day for Abraham. Like, Abraham, they had that fight. I thought that was all fine. So, I like the fact that it didn't turn into a white savior movie, which it, you know, this is the early 90s. It very easily could have. So, those are my loves.
Brian Dennehy, for me, said he was a very good villain in this, like, the overarching nemesis. I thought he was great. Mm-hmm. And the soundtrack, for me, I think it worked. It wasn't just a one trick pony kind of thing. It all seemed to work for what it was.
I'm going to add in number four. You are absolutely right. I cannot believe I didn't put the score in. The score is dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to add it to my loves because I didn't put it in my favorite scene. The final fight. I think the final fight's great.
That is strange because if I look at my list of hates, the ending is ludicrous. I have written down absolutely ludicrous. I think the last fight is overall, I think it comes out of nowhere after he has the fight with Shortcut. He's suddenly in the ring with Brian Dennehy. I was like, oh, I probably should have seen that come in. The way he gets knocked out of the ring, I think, is all a bit dopey. The handshake at the end, I think, is I still don't understand that whatsoever.
The handshake at the end just means nothing, but
yeah, and that leads
I'm on about the actual final fight.
I'll give you that, fair enough. Number two, the tone is odd and inconsistent, and that kind of lends itself to that as well. And number three, and this is the biggest issue with the film, make no mistake, is the fact that I'm simply not buying James Marshall as the leading man. It's just I'm not having it. Like, this film is there's a much better version of this film, and it could basically be the same film just with a more convincing leading man. And as you said, the fact that, you know, every time he smiles it makes you uncomfortable, I'm like, well, that's not a good sign whatsoever. But he doesn't have chemistry with anyone in this movie, and the problem is they put him in a lot of relationships. They try and sell you, oh, he has a relationship with Ozzy, he has a relationship with Abraham, he's supposed to have a relationship with Dawn, he's got a very weird relationship with Romano, all these relationships, he has a relationship with Pappy, and then of course Brian Dennehy is being the big bad guy, and I don't buy any of them. And I think Ozzy Davis isn't the problem. Fucking Brian Dennehy's definitely not the problem. The problem keeps coming back to the fact that he's not a great leading man, which feels like I hate shitting on people. Like, it's not what I like to do on this podcast, but there's no escaping it with this film.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was the amount of, number one, the amount of build-ups to stories that didn't go anywhere. Like, the whole gang thing just didn't seem to go anywhere. You needed more for things like that, and that'll probably show in my one change. You're right. I'm not going to include James Marshall on his own. I've already said it. There's three cringe actors in this, and I know cringe is the word that needs to die, but they're cringeworthy actors. It's James Marshall, Shortcut, and Romano. Their line delivery never works. Shortcut trying to be the tough guy just doesn't work. He is just, I mean, he's trying to be the tough guy when all that happens to him is he gets beat down and just shown that he's a bitch the entire time. Nothing ever seems to be bad for him. The only time he's shown any sort of dominance or power is when he's got 900 guys against Lincoln and they're chasing him and Tommy through the streets. You know?
Yeah. I guess if you looked at it, he's like the classic bully thing.
Yeah,
like he's just like, I'm a bully and that's it, which I kind of get, but I totally know what you mean. He never has enough threat in him. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah. And that leads me to my third hate, which is the worst, one of the worst lines I've ever heard, is when they're hiding from Shortcut and they go, rats, don't worry though, it's not the humankind. What the fuck is that line? We know they're rats. I can see it's a rat. What was that? Because that went nowhere as well.
Are you sure it's not the Tommy, my mom hired a new dishwasher? I couldn't believe that was being delivered dramatically. Like, that is the line. Like, I found the quote. She's like, they've got nothing to talk about. So she goes and she's Tommy. And she's like, you know, the whole idea is like he's going off the rails. She's like, Tommy, my mom, you can't be a dishwasher anymore. You just don't show up to work. Like, that's it. That's the level of drama in their relationship. Go fuck yourself. Crazy.
What about Shortcut? Don't talk that Spanish shit to me.
Wait. Doesn't Ramon earlier in the film say, catch you on the greasy side?
That's Spitz. Oh, I remember Spitz. That Spitz. When she tells Leo Spitz to sit down, he goes, catch you on the greasy side. Like, what the fuck is that line?
There are a lot of bonkers lines in this film. And I'm like, fair play, like I was 10 in 1992, and this is America, you know, it's not the UK. But some of these lines, I'm like, I don't think we watched a lot of films growing up. I don't think I heard these lines in any other film. I don't think I've ever heard of the greasy side before. Like, no. They tried to make it a thing. It's just like Happy's chocolate obsession. Very strange.
When Romano gives him his hat and he goes, it's my first hat, and then smiles. And then you'd be a perverse individual to pass this up. Yeah, it just doesn't smell right. Just because you quit Ombre don't mean the rest of us have to. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, and that's another thing we have meant. Like, I know we mentioned the bowler hat situation, but this film just has a lot of hats in it. A lot of very 90s hats.
You did mention, like, Romano's pimp look.
Pimp look, and Abraham's, like, you know, because when I think of them, those, like, backwards caps, I always think of Samuel L. Jackson, and, like, you know, he had that Kangol face, didn't he? Where it's like, you know, he was the one guy, he almost made them famous on his own. They're like those, but they're twice as big. You know, they're just giant. They've almost made like a bit of a comeback in their own way over here because of like Peaky Blinders. But none of those hats are as big as the fuckers they're wearing in this film in 1992. So yeah, there are a lot of hats. There are a lot of strange lines. Cuba Gooding Jr. is called Abraham Lincoln. His wife is apparently a time traveler from the 1920s. It's a strange film.
Can I mention one more line?
Strange film.
Can I mention one more line?
I insist upon it.
Happy Jack, right? Don't give me this bullshit about Murphy's Law. If I run into Murphy, I'm going to kick him right in the balls.
Of course. The more we talk about it, it's like the opposite. I'm actually starting to enjoy this film more retrospectively. I'm like, this film is crazy. And I think you're onto something. I was like, if you don't watch it too critically, do let it wash over you. This film is so silly.
I mean, I said it last week, right? I watched this film whilst I was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Okay, after I shattered my kneecap and fractured my leg. So I was, so maybe, just maybe, it was the meds.
Yeah, you were almost certainly watching this on drugs, for sure. Yeah. And that's probably the best way to watch this film, but hey ho. In terms of alternative titles, my God, if ever a movie could do with an alternative title, it's Gladiator. Jesus Christ. Like, just to get out of this, like, to have any chance of anybody finding this film, unless they're specifically looking for it, it could really do with an alternative title. So Argentina, give it to us, man. Deliver the goods.
Why did you go Argentina?
Because you usually do it alphabetically.
Yeah. Oh, well done. It is Argentina first.
There we go.
And Gladiator, the challenge begins.
Well, the thing is, right, that's stupid, it's pointless. But in this instance, it's absolutely necessary because at least it differentiates it from the TV show and the movie.
Wait until we get to Austria, which is next, by the way, because they were listening.
Wait until we get to Austria, which is right fucking now.
Which is, I'm guessing the guy that titled this was listening to way too much Beastie Boys. Ready? Mm-hmm. Austria. Fists. You have to fight for your rights.
Yeah, that is Beastie Boys, yeah, for sure. Fish, you have to fight for your rights. Again, it's all getting a little bit straight to DVD, but I would argue outside the cast, this does feel like it probably should be a straight to DVD movie. So that's
also, if you're calling it Fists, isn't that the porn parody?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Imagine that you were like, oh, I'm going to watch a porn parody of Gladiator, and you end up watching Fists about underground boxing movies. Like, everything about this is confusing me a great deal. Luckily, it's still porn, so I'm going to watch it, but I have no idea what's going on.
I mean, you only need to watch the first 3 minutes. You're fine then.
So. Exactly. Yeah.
So Canada, Angel of the Ring.
Yeah, I mean, the film, as I said, does kind of paint Tommy in this almost angelic light. Like, his dad's like a bit of a loser, and even when he's still trying to get his like life together, because you never see his dad as this degenerate. Like, he's clearly, by the time the movie starts, he's already tied his life up. He just has these debts, you know, linked to his old way of thinking. But, you know, he's going off, you know, I always thought with the film, they were going to have like, oh, I've got to stay in, you know, Albuquerque for another week, whatever the fuck it is. And then they cut back and it's just like a fucking train of whores. And it's like, oh, he's still up to his own always. But, you know, he's just quietly trying to make life as easy as possible for his dad, trying to make that transition as smooth as possible. But so he is, you know, Tommy's trying to do the right thing. But again, even that narrative falls by the wayside because there's too much going on.
So France decided they didn't like Gladiator because it was just talking about one guy. So they called it Gladiators.
No, fair enough.
Yeah.
Maybe because on the poster, they were clear, like, listen, I don't think this guy's going to be a star. So we need to get Cuba Gooding Jr. on this poster, despite the fact that he doesn't really deserve to be on it, arguably. But there you go.
Greece, Street Gladiators.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You say, okay, maybe. Put me through this one. Italy, the gladiators of the road.
The thing is, they're not fighting on the street. It really should be like underground gladiator. Yep. That's what it should be.
Japan, going literal. Just, I love Japan. Fighting kids.
Yeah. But that's a problem though, isn't it? They are, as far as the script is concerned, fighting kids. And then you watch the film and go, nope, those are fighting men, for sure.
Romania, you had me question myself then. I was gonna, because I always question myself when I'm saying the names of the countries, and I nearly went Romania.
The thing is, right, sometimes I think you actually luck out. Like last week, you said Slovenia instead of Slovenia, how we would say it. I suspect that people, I've been to Slovenia, and I'm pretty sure the people in Slovenia probably pronounce it Slovenia. So I'm like correcting you incorrectly. Only over here, I don't know, man. If like usually it sounds like someone's being a bit like, oh, I've been to Slovenia, and over in Slovenia, they call it Slovenia. I don't think you were going for that at all, but just like Romania.
Yeah. I know good at pronunciation. I just carry on.
So. I know good with words on podcasts.
I know, no. Romania, boxing outside the law.
That's okay, yeah. A bit long-winded, but sure.
And Italy decided on, I said, what was this? No, who's it? One of them said Street Gladiators, and the last one we got is Sweden with Street Gladiator.
Oh, fair enough. Well, the thing is, right, none of those are great. But every single one of them would work better than Gladiator because of the situation that this film was put in by the subsequent TV show and the movie. So, yeah, just literally pick anything but Gladiator is what it is. Any facts for this film?
Yeah, we got a couple. So James Marshall did 2 hours of boxing, 1 hour of weight training, and 1 hour of jogging for 5 days a week for 4 months for this role.
I mean, you know, I'll give him that. He looks the part, and he can throw an okay punch. So, fair enough.
Yep. This has to be one you've written. This was James Marshall's first and last leading role.
Well, yeah, he had his shot. It didn't quite work. It is what it is. He's clearly, you know, obviously somebody's watched Twin Peaks and thought, well, you know, he looks the part, but yeah, he's just not a leading man.
Yep. James Marshall and Cuba Gooding Jr. appeared together later that year in A Few Good Men.
No, see, he got some roles, man. Fair play to him.
Yep. The knife Shortcut uses to threaten Lincoln is an all stainless Spyderco Delica. He throws it on the ground when school security shows up. I call bullshit because he clearly threw it in the air.
Yeah, it does technically end up on the ground eventually, I assume. Like,
doesn't. It's stuck in somebody's skull.
Yeah, it might well be. But even if it did, yeah, he threw it up in the air for sure. It was a bizarre move on his part.
Vonte Sweet and Cuba Gooding Jr. star together in Boys in the Hood. I believe Vonte Sweet was Spitz.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was a guy. Sorry, he was a guy called Tidbits.
Oh, of course he is. By the way, a much, much better movie, by the way. I'm going to go on record here and say, if you're thinking, oh, what should I watch today? 1992's Gladiator or Boys in the Hood. Definitely watch Boys in the Hood.
Gladiator, all day long.
Absolutely. You're a lunatic. You're a fucking lunatic.
I will watch this film again. I'm sorry. Dude, that's it for facts. There's like 6 facts for this film.
Fair enough. Hug to the Future. So this is where we discuss whether there should be a remake, sequel. You should just leave it be or let it die. My immediate response was let it die, unsurprisingly. But then I was like, right, this is arguably the perfect movie to remake because it's a solid enough idea, like the whole underground boxing thing, especially in a high school. Like, these are the films I think you actually should remake, where it's a decent idea, but they just didn't stick the landing, or the film doesn't really work. And then I started thinking about, like, all right, what would immediately make this film better? It's like, well, you've got to get a better lead. And I was like, based to bring it back to Gladiator, I was like, Paul Mescal in like the Tommy role. I'm like, he'd be really good. Like, he's like the up and coming actor, looks the part. I was like, oh, who would play Abraham? And I was like, oh, maybe like Daniel Kaluuya. And I was like, man, Daniel Kaluuya is like 30 years old, maybe older. It's not going to work. I was like, no, this is Gladiator. I insist on having a middle aged man playing my high school kids in this film. It feels like it wouldn't be a Gladiator movie without it. So I'm actually going to say a remake. And I know I was like, Brian Dennehy's like the tricky one. Who's going to have like that big physicality? And I was like, dude, like Russell Crowe, 100%. I'm not sure what I'm.
Are you just saying this? Are you saying this because these are actors from Gladiator and Gladiator 2?
Honestly, this was just a happy accident. I wrote it down. I was like, man, there's a lot of Gladiator characters. The reason I wrote Russell Crowe isn't because of Gladiator. It's because of Unhinged. Did you watch that film where it's like a road rage movie. Yeah. It was released a couple of years ago. And he is carrying a lot of timber. He's even bigger than Brian Dennehy. But what he does have is that physicality. Where he walks into him, it's like, okay, he's clearly a middle-aged man. He's carrying a bit of timber. But you're like, oh, I 100% believe the moment I see him that he could fuck you up. Like, you know, even if you were a boxer and a kid, it's like, oh, you do not want to be fighting 50-year-old Russell Crowe. So I'm like, yeah, I want to make a film where it's basically Gladiator 2 with Paul Mescal's in two versions of Gladiator 2. Yeah. Russell Crowe, that would confuse the shit out of people. It's like, oh, we've got Russell Crowe in for Gladiator 2. Really? Yeah, but it's not at all what you think. So that's what I'm going to go for, an intentional remake of Gladiator 2.
I want to see a legacy sequel where you've got Tommy and Dawn's son, you know, teaming up with Baby Black Beauty, Abraham Lincoln's son.
Okay, fair enough.
And going into a new underground, like, I don't know, like Horn's legacy lives on in a new underground boxing, and Tommy and Cuba Gooding Jr., was it Abraham Lincoln, have to show them the ways of the boxing to...
I think one is going to be hard to get Cuba Gooding Jr. back, and I'm just not sure if I want to.
I don't think it's going to be as hard as you think it is, mate.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, it's recent IMDb. I'm thinking of like, you know, mid-90s, early 2000s Cuba Gooding Jr. But he's another one, like one of those weird actors. Like, he can be really good, but he also, like in this film, he's going for it. Like, he is really overacting at times. And you do get that sometimes with Cuba Gooding Jr. But yeah, maybe we could get him all back for a straight to DVD. And that's what it should be, straight to DVD. Oh, yeah. Hiccups.
I'm good with that. I love a straight to DVD film. I'm absolutely fine with that. Yeah.
See, make a change. So this is where basically you're only allowed to make one change to film. So the obvious one is maybe a compelling leading man, but I really think this film needs is like they need to work on the relationships, refine them, get rid of some of the characters, make it more about those, because nothing in this film ultimately really matters. So that's what I'm going to go with. Work on the relationships, refine the storytelling.
You've introduced the gangs, make the end, as much as I love the final fight, the end needs to be the like gang warfare thing where you've introduced them and then they just disappear after Shawcut gets his fucking teeth caved in.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like a tag team battle almost, where it's like, you know, it's like Abraham's his corner man, Spitz is his corner man. It goes off. They turn into a big scrap in the middle of the ring. Then they all get them out of there. So eventually it's just him and Shawcut, and then they end up having that fight. So yeah, and then he fights, you know, the big boss, Brian Dennehy, at the end still. But yeah, I think that's a decent idea.
It's for me.
Cool. In terms of video games, I think there's a very obvious answer for this. I'm not sure if you remember Pit Fighter. It was a slightly naff underground fighting game from Atari that we all incorrectly thought was cool in the early 90s. Now, I could very easily be just talking about this movie, in fairness. So I think because Pit Fighter had like the same, you know, like the old Mortal Kombat games where they had like the characters digitized.
Pit Fighter.
It was one of those weird ones because it was really popular for like a year or two in the early 90s. And it was ported because it was an arcade game by Atari and it was ported to everything. It was on like the fucking Game Gear, the Mega Drive, the NES, Super NES, everything. And we were all like, man, look at those digitized graphics. And then all of a sudden, one day when, you know, Mortal Kombat came out and we went back to Pit Fight, we're like, oh, man, this film's shit. The video game's terrible. So, yeah, I would just go Pit Fighter, but maybe with, like, a touch of Persona where, you know, you have to manage, you know, RPG style, your, like, lifestyle in school. So that was one of the things Tommy asked doing this film. It's like, oh, can I still wash the dishes? Can I still go to school and get my grades and train and do the underground fighting and pay off my dad's debts? So you have, like, the RPG element with all that, but then the mechanics are just, like, really shitty Pit Fighter, basically, scenes from 1991.
You don't know how right you were, mind. when you said about the film, because I'm assuming you've never watched the Pit Fighter film.
There's a Pit Fighter movie.
I don't know if it's based on the game, but there's a film called Pit Fighter.
Well, there is a long history of like little known adaptations of fighting games. Like there was a Dead or Alive, like live action movie with Holly Valance in it back in the day. So,
I've seen this one as well. 2005. Jack Severino has no memory. All he knows is the brutal sport of pit fighting. When his past catches up with him, he realizes he is not who he thought he was, for some men must fight for redemption. Now, there's a reason why I've seen this film. Scott Adkins is in it.
I mean, right, fair play. That is a genuine reason for you to watch this film. Let's also be clear that you did not need a reason to watch this film. Even if Scott Adkins wasn't in this film and you said, I watch Pit Fighter, like, I'm not like, I can't believe you watch Pit Fighter. I'm like, well, yeah, of course you watch Pit Fighter.
You know who else was in it, though? Stephen Graham.
Well, fair play. So there are some names in that.
Yeah.
But we don't know for sure if that was actually based on the video game.
No, I just remember being a lot of pit fighting against different fighters. So
the thing is, I'm just not sure, like in 2005, even if the name has any sway. There is a very, like, basically there's people who are our age where Pit Fighter came out when we were like 8, 9 years old. And we're like, my God, look at the violence and look how cool the digitized graphics are. Like anyone else older or younger, like they just don't know what this thing is. So I just don't think Pit Fighter has lived on.
Nope. And the film hasn't either. It has one fact.
Oh, mate, I've got to hear it.
Fernando Romero's debut.
It's not even a good fact.
No.
The fact should be one person watched this film. Rob.
Yep.
That's it. What's your video game for this?
You already mentioned it when we were talking about the film. It's Punch-Out, isn't it?
Punch-Out worked pretty well.
Yeah, where Horn is the
Mr. Dream.
Tyson at the end.
Tyson, depending which version you had. I never got, because the NES version of Punch-Out specifically is legitimately one of my favorite games of all time. And I don't say that lightly. I'm a video game guy. But when I say like the best video games of all time, I always think of ones where, because I loved like Shenmue when I was growing up, but Shenmue hasn't aged that well. I'll always have a soft spot for it, but I wouldn't be as ridiculous. Like it's one of my favorite games, but it's not one of the best because it hasn't stood the test of time. I would say that if anyone picked up Punch-Out on the NES now, it plays as well as it did back in like 1989, 1990. And I got it back in, like it was one of the first games I got on the NES back in the day when I was a kid. And my only regret was that because of the charges that came in for Mike Tyson with all the rape stuff, they rebranded. They didn't have to, because it used to be called Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, and they rebranded it as just Punch-Out. It's the exact same game. The only difference is at the end, instead of fighting Mike Tyson, you fight Mr. Dream. So they just made him white, basically. Same moveset and everything. And I was always disappointed because that game is nails. It was almost like the Dark Souls of its day, basically, where you had to learn the, you know, the, what am I thinking of? What's the word? The patterns for all the bosses. Otherwise, you just get murked. And I remember getting to the last boss. I'm like, fucking Mr. Dream, man. I so wanted it to be Mike Tyson. But yeah, that game is still to this day an absolute masterpiece and a great choice, I think.
It is a good, like, but I think you win with Pit Fighter. I was just reading about
Pit
Fighter.
I think you might actually win because of Ozzie Davis. His trainer, and I can't remember because the boxer is called Little Mac, so he just be Little Toppy, whatever. And I can't remember, is it just Coach? I can't remember the name of the coach, but he looks like fucking Ozzie Davis in this film. And he's basically got the exact same lines. It's crazy.
I'd happily take a Pit Fighter or a Punch Out version of Gladiator. Yeah. I was just reading about Pit Fighter as you were talking then. You had the three characters, didn't you? Buzz, Ty, and Kato. Did you know they used those characters for a weird sequel-esque game called Guardians of the Hood?
No.
Yeah. So, hang on, right. I went too fast. So, Legacy. So, Kato, Buzz, and Ty were returning along with three new selectable fighters, Connor, Tanya, and Chief.
Great.
Those
names.
Are also three of the playable characters ultimately featured in Atari's subsequent game, Guardians of the Hood.
Oh, so it was like an unofficial sequel because it was also made by Atari.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've never heard of that. I assume it wasn't particularly good if we've never heard of it.
I'm guessing not, mate.
I guess not. Well, I'm glad those characters got another run out at least, but hey, or at least, because that would have been actual actors coming in.
On the Game Boy. That's how I used to play Pit Fighter.
On the Game Boy, must have been. But that's the thing, though. I played it on the Game Gear, which would have looked a little bit better than the Game Boy, but yeah, definitely not the way to play an already pretty ugly game. It's one of those, like, I still have oddly fond memories of it because like you said, like the gameplay was almost irrelevant. It was like, oh my God, look, blood in a video game and digitized graphics. If you went back and played Pit Fighter now, I'm going to go on record and say it will not hold up. There is just no fucking chance. Play Punch-Out instead. That's much better. And that's on Nintendo Switch Online. And a lot of people would point you towards, because it looks a bit better, the Super NES version, which does look good and it's still a good game, but I stick with the fact that the NES version is even better than the arcade version. But sorry, I don't want to turn this into a Punch-Out podcast. So that leads us to scores and recommendations, and these might be wildly different. Unsurprisingly, I'm not going to recommend this.
Shall I go first?
Well, yes. I mean, mine's obvious. Like, you know, like, I'm not giving it a 1 star. I'm giving this 2 stars. I'm not going to recommend it to anyone. There's a little bit of fun to be had, but there were just too many problems with this film. There were too many and especially for someone, and I'm not talking about someone, because obviously Rob will be able to give a different opinion, as someone who grew up with it and has, you know, nostalgia attached. I'm watching it in 2024 as someone who's never seen it before. There's no fucking chance I'm recommending this film to anyone. And it is a 2 star film.
Well, this is interesting. I mean, you're wrong. It's a 3 star film. There are some things that let it down, but it's definitely a 3 star film. It's better than a 2 star, but it's not one you can recommend, really. Like, it's hard to go, especially now in 2024. Watch this film from 1992 about 45-year-olds being 18-year-olds boxing. Like, it doesn't sell well. I mean, it was good to watch it. It will be a film I will watch again. It was good to watch it for the podcast. The thing is, though,
you can give it, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the film, just be clear, it is currently on Amazon Prime and you don't have to pay for it. If you've got an Amazon Prime subscription, you can just go and give this a go. And I would say, like, at least give it 20 minutes. Like we mentioned, like, and what makes it hard to recommend is the fact that it's not just like, you know, you go back and you see some films, like, oh, that film's so 80s, but it has like an 80s vibe. This isn't even a 90s film. It's a 1992 film. And that comes from the soundtrack, the clothes, everything about it. But yeah, go back and give it a bash.
Highly recommend. For this
It's not weird. We're both like, we don't recommend. And then we both kind of recommend it. Absolutely bonkers.
Well, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're the type of person who would watch this film.
Yeah, you probably are, in fairness. You probably are.
Yeah, so I'm good with that. So, Bridge, for me, I'm going to say 3. But so, what are we... that's it then. So, what are we watching next?
Yeah, so next week, I would argue that you've picked an objectively bad film this week. But that is, that's my opinion. Opinions differ. I am going to pick what is objectively and unequivocally a disaster piece. And I think it's our first disaster piece. Oh, do you already know where I'm going with this? Or?
No, I don't know. I'm just going to say, I thought you were going to say I'm picking objectively a great film. And I thought, well, no. I'm already going to hate it. Because usually the films you say are great, I know I'm going to hate.
Yeah, imagine if I just said Gladiator, the other Gladiator. No, like, basically, I put this in, obviously, into Amazon Prime. And then it came up with other films you might like. And, of course, it picked a whole bunch of pretty bad movies. But one of them, which is unquestionably terrible, but I'm actually really looking forward to rewatching because I think there's so much to talk about, is Jean-Claude Van Damme's Street Fighter. We have tiptoed around this for a while. It's definitely a bad film, but it is, without question, like, it's in that category of so bad it's good. Like, there is, you know, every decision, you're like, what the fuck were they thinking? From the casting, the way it's shot, the fact that they blew all of their budget. You know, there's, and I love Street Fighter. I love the video games. I love the animated movie. I don't love this film, but there is joy to be taken from the fact that it is such a piece of shit. So I'm actually, and that is the thing. I've not watched this film for a long time. Like, is it in that category of so bad it's good? Like, will I go back and watch it with the right mindset and go, well, it's, you know, there's going to be no surprise. This film is terrible. But will I enjoy watching it in 2024? And I think there is a genuine chance of me, like, really loving this film. And
it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Would I enjoy watching this film? Yeah, maybe. I mean, we all know the kind of films I like anyway. So would I enjoy rewatching this film? Possibly. Yeah. I probably will enjoy watching this 1 star would not recommend film. Because I
That is exactly the point. I think you are right. There is every chance we're both going to come away and go, well, that's the thing, though. It might end up being, oh, that's a 1 star film. Would you recommend? We'll both go, yes, 100% watch Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter, because it is very much in that, like, I can't believe this happened. Like, Kylie Minogue is fucking cameo in this film. What the fuck?
Is this our first Van Damme? It is, isn't it?
No. We did Universal Soldier.
Oh, we did. Okay.
Oh, and we did Kick. No. This is like our fourth. We did Kickboxer, we did Bloodsport, we did Universal Soldier.
All right, yeah, okay. No, he's an all-star for us then. No, I was going to say, because we've had we had one of our listeners, Stephen Dunn, didn't we, who asked us to do Time Cop, or there was another one he mentioned.
Time Cop was one of the big ones that keeps coming up. And that would be a film where I'm like, what's funny seen that film for a long time.
We said, yeah, mate, we'll take on board what you want. But we're gonna give you Street Fighter instead. So
the thing is, right, the other Jean-Claude Van Damme film, because some people want us to do Time Cop, and I'm all for that. We'll definitely do that at some point. The film you and I keep bringing up and is Cyborg, where we are genuinely concerned that it's one of those we both have fond memories of, but we're both a little worried that if we go back and watch it, it's going to be a shit show. This is completely different because we know this film was and remains a shit show. It's just, is it still so bad that it is fun? Like, because sometimes it doesn't always work, and there are different like levels of people. Like, I remember I mentioned there are previously on this podcast, there are certain things that happen in your life which tell you you're growing up. And I'm not talking about getting hair in weird places. I talked about, you know, drinking orange juice with pulp was a classic one, or eating olives all of a sudden. A third one for me was going to see Batman and Robin, because it was the first film I remember coming out of the cinema and being critical of. When I was younger, you know, it was like, you go see films. I mean, fuck, it's still the case for you and you're 40 years old. It's like, you just like, I'm just excited to see a film on DVD or VHS, whatever. But you know what I mean? Like, I went to the cinema, I'm like, I'm just seeing a Batman movie. This is great. Yeah. And I remember I came out of the cinema for Batman and Robin, and I remember looking at my dad and being like, I don't think that was very good. And I think that's the first time that had ever happened to me. You know, so it was like, oh, I'm suddenly watching movies in a different way. And I was like, oh, maybe going back and rewatching Batman and Robin now, it'll be so bad that it'll be fun. And I watched it for 20 minutes, and it wasn't that for me. It was just a horrible movie.
We had the same epiphany in the same year. Batman and Robin was 97, wasn't it?
Yeah, 97. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had the same epiphany in the same year.
Yeah.
Different films.
Oh, really? What was it for you?
Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, yeah, that is... I still have such a unique memory of Mortal Kombat Annihilation because I have seen so few movies at the cinema twice, because usually... Right. And we were talking about it just before the podcast starts. We don't... Despite the fact that we're 153 episodes into a podcast where we legit... Like, we go back and rewatch movies, neither of us rewatch that many movies outside of the podcast because there's so much other stuff. And it's the same with video games. It's the same with books. Like, you know, I like the idea of going back to them, but there's just so much other shit I haven't done yet. So there's not many movies I've gone to cinema and seen a movie, like the same movie twice. Mortal Kombat Annihilation is one of those movies, bizarrely, because...
Why would you do it to yourself twice?
Well, it was... I'm not sure if you remember in Cardiff, there used to be... was it called the Munro? Or the one that was on Albany Road?
Oh, no, that's
no,
not...
No, the Munro was the one in Robina.
Yeah. The Monaco.
Monaco. I used to love that cinema, and it closed. And one of the last movie I ever watched in there was fucking Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And I went to see it with my friends because obviously we all, you know, we're big fans of Mortal Kombat in the 90s. And we're like, oh, we'll go and see the sequel because we all enjoyed, what is it? Like, the first movie is not great, but we all enjoyed it. And it was a bad film. But some of my other friends wanted to go and see it. So I was just like, I'll go and see it with you guys because I knew the cinema was closing soon. So I'm like, bizarrely, like a cinema I loved. It was not only the last film I ever watched there, but I also watched it twice.
There's a reason why it closed down. It played Mortal Kombat and couldn't fucking, recoup its losses. Oh, my God.
By the way, just be clear, we are not doing Mortal Kombat Annihilation on this podcast. No fucking way. We'll do Mortal Kombat.
I don't even know how I felt. Like, I went into this film feeling adult at the time because I was into a 15 and I was 14 and, you know, on the screen. And you come out of this film going, well, that was just fucking shite.
That's the thing as well. It's weird that this movie, like played such a big part. Like, it's memorable for weird ways. Like I said, it was, like, one of the few films I've seen twice. It was, like, the last film I saw in a cinema that I loved. And for you, it was, like, the first 15 movie you saw. And that was a big deal back in the day. And it's such a shame because the first 15 I went to see at the cinema was Starship Troopers.
And they made it in 97.
And that was so much better. Like, when I went to see it, like, it felt like, oh, this is a big deal. I'm going in without my parents. I got in to watch it. The only difference is that film was mega violent. And, like, it ticked all the boxes. I'm like, oh, this is the best day of my life.
That was the next one I went to watch, was Starship Troopers. It was all in 97. That's when we got
all
to do
97.
It.
Yeah. 97 was a good year, a big year for, well, that's thing 15. It's just one of those years, isn't it? But, don't worry. We're not doing Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I know you can make an argument that Street Fighter is maybe as bad as Mortal Kombat Annihilation. The difference is, and I always find these movies interesting, is the fact that there's clearly been a lot of money put into it. They got Jean-Claude Van Damme on board, who was a big star at the time, and it's just a complete shit show, despite apparently some people's best efforts.
And it's, I mean, the good thing about Street Fighter was Raul Julia, who was like, yeah, dying. I need a paycheck for my family, so I'm just going to go all out and just do this. And he did. He fucking sold. He did everything he could to make this one piece of... Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one person who knows, like, he had no interest in the video games. He knew what movie he was in. Like, he's not playing Bison from the video games. He's playing Bison in that movie. And he's the one, one of the few saving graces.
I might be stepping on your line from next week. I don't know. I always remember the one line where he says, for you, Bison came and destroyed your village and did this. For me, it was a Tuesday.
That's a great one. And I always remember the one where Jean-Claude Van Damme as Gaal is giving the speech to the cameras. We are going to go to Chateauneuf and kick Bison's ass. It's just like, oh, dude, it's so fucking... It's like, he's supposed to be like the... Like, Gaal is supposed to be the most all-American character ever conceived.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get this Belgian to do it. Oh, dude. Like, legitimately now, the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, I cannot wait to rewatch this film. And I don't think it's going to be a tough sell here. I think people will want to rewatch it. And just to be clear, if you're listening to this now, it's on Amazon Prime. So if you've got the service, you don't have to pay any extra. You can enjoy Street Fighter, the live action movie.
Also, if you're in Sky, that was Cyborg. I was searching where Cyborg would be as well. And randomly, that's on Sky to stream.
Shit, man, we should maybe do Cyborg soon. Anyway, one thing at a time. One terrible movie at a time. So, yes, this has been 1992's Gladiator, unbelievably. Even more more unbelievably, we are covering Street Fighter, Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter. So if you've got nothing else to add, I've been Liam, he has been Rob, and you have been listening to the Hey You Guys podcast. Oh, and before I forget, where can folk reach us if they were so inclined to?
Well, you can actually reach us on Hey You Guys 80s at Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. But if you want to send us a mail, do heyyouguys80s@gmail.com. Send us in your recommendations. Send us in your thoughts about any of the episodes. Just literally talk to us. We'll have a one-sided talk with you on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're nice folk. You know, get in touch. But no, cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye now. Hey, you guys!